Have a seat and breathe. See the breath moving. Notice your body and how it moves, shifts and changes. The body moves and the mind is the watcher. This is the people to the right of him look nice and bright, but most of us here look black, dark. Says maybe it's because you're wearing dark shirts. Just start waking up. Become aware. You'll start feeling a little brighter. I think the food is poison. Become aware. The mind needs a home, needs a place to rest. So have the mind at its home, and then when the mind leaves it, we can know so. Lungta Mahabua, he used the home of the word Budo. He did it ever since he was young, all the way until he was old. He kept saying it until his mind would be at rest and at peace and get very, very bright. Pa used the breath as his home. He would breathe until the breath got more and more shallow, until all that was left was the breath would stop and all there would be left would be light. When it got really bright, when he was young, his mind used to go into the light and see the heavens and things like that and the angels. And then he realized, uh-oh, if I go out there, what if I see ghosts? He got scared. He decided, okay, I'm not going to go into that light anymore. I'm just going to stay aware. So just keep breathing instead. Notice the mind that moves out and become the knower. But once we become the knower, we don't just stay the knower. When I was younger, I used to just practice and become the knower and didn't know what to do with it. But a lot of us aren't able to keep the knower, of course, and our minds are busy ones. We have short attention span. We can't practice higher levels of concentration. Are our minds busier or less busy than they were when they were a kid? Different people have different mannerisms. They have different demeanors. Some people work well with Budo, some people work well with the breath, some people work well with watching the mind. I was an opinionated type person, intellectual, lots of thoughts, and so what worked well for me was watching the mind. So Lung Pu Dun taught me to watch the mind. the four foundations of mindfulness are what we practice within. And if we use the breath, we have to make sure that we use the breath in a way that it's within the four foundations of mindfulness. It is in the four foundations of mindfulness, but we don't just use it to become peaceful or still, the breath. We have to use it as a home base for mindfulness. So the in and out breath, if used correctly, we can go from the beginning all the way to nirvana. There are four foundations of mindfulness, but Lungpu Dun taught Lungpa to watch the mind. But it doesn't matter which one of the four foundations we watch, they all can take us to the end. Lungpa Mahabua's sister, he had a chat with her, and she asked, how is it that we came to the same place in our practice? That Lungpa watched his mind, and she watched the body, but they came to the same place. We can feel that we're breathing now, can't we? We don't have to over-focus on the breath. We can just sense that this body is breathing, just in a general way. When we see this body breathing out and breathing in, the mind is the watcher. When we do that, we're practicing within the four foundations of mindfulness. In the body category, the first, we can see that this body is subject to the three characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. We're having mindfulness, knowing the body. Sometimes when we're watching in this way, we'll have pleasant and unpleasant feelings arise. Like, for example, we can sit and breathe and then we feel itchy, right? Some of us are scratching all the time, scratching our nose, scratching our leg. But we don't even see it. We don't even know that we are, because we're not practicing mindfulness of the body, seeing form or matter working in the mind watching. And Vedana are feelings. Pleasant and unpleasant feelings coming up and going away. Sometimes, like an itch or a pain comes and it goes. Sometimes it's a pleasant or unpleasant feeling in the heart. Feel happy or unhappy. Sometimes the mind feels a little bit tortured sitting in meditation, and defilements then come up. Hating can come up. Mindfulness can see the hating. And then we can get lost in thought, our mind wanders away. Then when our mind wanders off, sometimes we think of something we like and we feel happy. We don't have to have a wholesome mind to feel happy. Both wholesome and unwholesome minds can trigger happiness. So the mind gets lost and caught in delusion. It can still be happy. So we are in the four foundations of mindfulness, watching pleasant and unpleasant feelings. We can be there, noticing the feelings of the body coming and going, the feelings in the heart coming and going. Sometimes we're sitting and then we feel happy, and then craving comes into the happiness. Sometimes we're sitting and we feel uncomfortable, and then aversion or dosa comes in. Usually when happiness happens, craving follows and interferes. We get enamored with the happiness. We want to stay with it. The craving is in there. When there is suffering in the heart that happens, then dosa or aversion of some kind, like anger, will come up after an unhappy or unpleasant feeling in the heart. So we can sit and breathe, and we start feeling happy, and then craving comes in. Or we're sitting and breathing, we feel uncomfortable, and aversion comes in. So here we're working in the foundations of mindfulness. We can see the body, that's the breathing, watching the body breathing, and then a pleasant or unpleasant feeling comes up in the body or mind, that's the Vedana. And then the defilements come up. If it feels happy, then there's craving. If there's discomfort in the heart or unpleasantness in the heart, then there's aversion. That's the third foundation of mindfulness, the mind. And they're all demonstrating the three characteristics for us, right? We're breathing. The breathing isn't permanent. One moment it's breathing in, the next moment it's breathing out. The happiness or unhappiness that goes on in the heart is impermanent. They each come and they each go. They come up out of control. They happen on their own. We didn't decide for them. That's seeing non-self or anatta. We didn't order this to happen. And similarly, after those things happen, either craving or aversion, will come up in the heart, and those weren't under control either. And those come and go as well, showing their three characteristics. Mindfulness comes and sees these things. We can't order that to happen either. It happens by itself. Everything in the body and mind are under, in the realm of the three characteristics. They're so when we have this mindfulness, we can start to see the truth of the aggregates of the body and mind. We keep studying, we keep seeing. So this is working within the four foundations of mindfulness, are developing the four foundations of mindfulness for us. Seeing rupa and nama arising and falling, we are researching the Dhamma, it could be say, Tama Vijaya, coming to see the truth. It's not about thinking. It's not that type of research. It's seeing the truth. We're in the field of research, our body and mind, not literature. We see the truth of the body, the feelings, the mind, and Dhamma. This is Dhamma Vijaya, or researching Dhamma, seeing the truth. Let me watch the body and mind working continuously. When we have mindfulness arise, whatever was unwholesome in the mind that was seen will disappear immediately. And then the mind is wholesome. We practice in this way and wholesomeness of mind will appear more and more often. And it will help to make the mind less unwholesome. Unwholesome less often. And this is called wirya. This is what effort is. Effort doesn't mean, wirya or effort doesn't just mean trying really hard. It means having a mind that frees itself of unwholesome states and develops wholesome states. If our mind is more and more wholesome and we're practicing well, there might be piti or joy, rapture that comes up. Let's be careful of craving for that feeling, and let's just see this piti when it comes up, so that the mind can not get enamored by it, but can be the knower, and continue to watch mental and physical phenomena coming and going according to the three characteristics. When the mind gets stronger, the mindfulness gets stronger, and the wisdom gets stronger, then we start making our way to equanimity. There's a Dhamma called the Pochos, and these are part of what he was describing. And working on the different Pochos brings us to this state of equanimity. We see the three characteristics, happiness, unhappiness, become equivalent in the sense that they're both under stress and they both disappear. When the mind is equanimous, happiness comes up and the mind doesn't get enamored by or doesn't crave the happiness. And when unhappiness comes, the mind doesn't try to push it away or have aversion to any unwholesome or unhappy state. This is true equanimity as a result of wisdom. Usually we're wavering and shifting in our hearts because the good states, we want them to stay long. When they go away, we want them to come back. And when the negative states are there, we don't want them, and we try and get them away and make it better. This is a mind that is not equanimous and is wavering, shifting, struggling, and creating more rebirths. When the mind is equanimous, it isn't fabricating anything new. isn't creating rebirths in that period, and it is the gateway to enlightenment. When the mind is busy and restless, and wow, that's great, you know, there's no enlightenment going to happen from there. When the mind enters enlightenment, it'll move into the jhanas automatically, the higher absorption levels of concentration. There are 8. The 4th jhana and up all have equanimity in them. When the mind automatically moves into the jhana and is about to enlighten, there'll be the rising and falling of the mind 2 or 3 times, and then the Dhamma element will be experienced, not the knower, something else. It'll be very bright. It's a very different brightness, a very different light than the brightness, the light of samadhi. That one has limits and boundaries. This one has no light, has no boundaries. Says that once there is a new enlightened being on the earth, there is so much joy and appreciation, anumotana, from the angels and the deities, that the sound of their appreciation is louder than lightning. And in order for all of this to happen, we have to become awake, aware, alert. So let's start with a home base. When we read the Buddha scriptures and we think that the Buddha just watch the in and out breath and then enlightened from there, that's a little bit naive. The truth is, if you take a look more closely, he enlightened seeing paticca-samubbada, the conditioned arising of phenomena. Mm-hmm. But he did use the breath as a home base. So let's start breathing. We watch the breath for a while, then we can start to see that the body is breathing. We aren't breathing. It isn't us breathing. It's the body breathing. And start to see that the body is just like a bag, a leather bag or a skin bag. Mokalana had a girl flirt with him. And he looked at her and he said, the woman's body is just a bag of skin with 9 holes that leak. When he said this to the girl, she just ran away. She knew she had no chance of getting this monk, saying that it's just leaking disgusting things, a bag leaking disgusting things. Okay. So let's practice. Breathe and no so, breathe and no so, but let's not focus in on the breath. If we are over-focusing on the breath, then we're practicing gasina to get powers and things like that. We're not actually in the four foundations of mindfulness. If we see, there are a lot of gasinas, like we can see the spaciousness inside our body. If we notice the spaciousness within the body, it's the air gasina. We can notice the earth gasina. We can notice the wind gasina. Noticing the breath. Doesn't matter what gasina that we notice, after a while they can become bright light. Even the body can seem like a stone or like some mass. After a while, if we keep noticing it, it turns into light. So any gasina that we practice becomes light. And often if we are able to succeed with one gasina, we can succeed with all of them in making them become light. But Lungpa says, this is all a waste of time though. It's much better to see the body and mind and start studying the truth. See the body isn't us, seeing it sitting and breathing. See it isn't us, it's breathing on its own, noticing the pleasant and unpleasant feelings coming in and going away. Seeing craving and aversion come and go. These have far more purpose than practicing gasina, seeing within the foundations of mindfulness. Some people walk and they focus in on the legs, hold their attention on the legs, hold their attention on the stomach, hold their attention on the breath. Whatever they're watching, they hold their attention there. That's not practicing within the four foundations of mindfulness. That's samatha. The mind could get bright, but then they're just stuck there. So from now on, just let's become awake and aware. When we're awake and aware correctly, when we see the body breathing, we see that it isn't us. We see that the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings are subject to the three characteristics. And the mind is wholesome or unwholesome, has greed, anger, or delusion. The mind is busy or restless, depressed. We see these things, and we see them come and see them go, see that we can't control them, that they're subject to the three characteristics as well. All the body phenomena, all the mind phenomena are subject to the three characteristics. And whatever is seen by the mind. But the mind is also subject to the three characteristics. Sometimes it's the knower, sometimes it's the thinker, sometimes it's the focuser. It isn't us. We want to know, but it won't know. Mm-hmm. We're intending to know, but then we're lost. We're lost since we were intending. So today we're learning some deep, profound Dhamma. The there aren't that many people interested in profound Dhamma. Most people are interested in superpowers and interesting things and fun things. Some monks criticized Longpa, saying that he should be talking about easier things. Just tell them to donate and tell them to do bunya and merit, to meritorious deeds. That's hard enough for them as it is. They thought he was wasting his time teaching these profound things. Who's had a pet dog? Have you ever showered your dog? Bathed your dog? Yeah, you see how they try to force themselves to not be showered. They try to resist it, run away. It's hard to even just get them wet. They run away from the water. That's what we're like, trying to make us learn the Dhamma. Like the dog, not willing to get wet. But some of us are ready. It's not that all of us lay people are bad and the monks are good. Not at all. There are some of each of us that are ready. A monk has an ordination ceremony, and then they become a monk. But are they really a monk? It's just an illusion. It's just conceptually a monk. But their hearts aren't a true disciple of the Buddha yet, necessarily. Can women be monks? Well, they're not allowed in Thailand to wear those robes and have that ceremony. But their heart might become that of a monk. See, now that I'm starting to talk about something outside of Dhamma, everybody's getting more interested and enjoying. It's not the body that we turn into a monk. It's the heart. A monk, disciple of the Buddha, so to speak. And the heart understands the Dhamma. So start with one of the four foundations of mindfulness, and eventually we'll see them all. The mind will come to the same place as anyone else who has seen the truth just the same. So we start by waking up and having mindfulness so that we can see the four foundations. We have mindfulness of the four foundations so we can see the truth of body and mind. We watch them until the mind is equanimous. And when the mind is equanimous, we can release and liberate. It's not hard to understand this process, but if we feel confused about what was just said, just know that we're confused. Some of us are curious or skeptical people. We hear something, we get curious, we want to know more, or we get skeptical. Some of us aren't skeptical at all, not skeptical, not curious, just happy, enjoying things all day. The big thinkers are skeptical, are curious. Oh, what should I do? Should I do it this way? Should I do it that way? It doesn't matter which way you do it, just have mindfulness. Try to practice as much as you can. When you do, you'll know that the Buddha is real. There really was a Buddha. There really is a Dhamma. There really is a Sangha. We'll know when we reach the end that the Dhamma and the mind are the same thing. And if we are Sangha or not Sangha, it is nothing about ordination. It is about this heart and its understanding. So the mind and the Sangha are the same. And what about the Buddha? The Buddha and the mind, are they the same thing? Well, what are the characteristics of the Buddha? The Buddha has wisdom. We don't have the same wisdom as him. The Buddha has compassion. We don't have the type of compassion that he does. He has purity of heart. But the Sangha, his disciples, have the same pureness of heart. So the Buddha and his disciples have the same purity. And in that sense, they are one. So the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha are one when the mind has liberated and is pure. And then there is a true refuge. And it's all one. We can only see this for ourselves when the mind is truly liberated. The teachers taught us, and Lungpa is teaching us according to the elders and what they taught. Never mind what other people are doing and what they're saying. Let's watch our own defilements. Practice within ourselves. So that's enough for today. You're welcome to go home. And anybody that has questions about their practice can ask now.